You can't see it, smell it, or taste it, but you might be breathing it right now. Radon gas can be found in homes all over the United States. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today, and we're going to start off by talking about radon gas remediation. Radon gas is the second most common cause of lung cancer after smoking, and the Environmental Protection Agency estimates that it causes 21,000 lung cancer deaths every year in the United States. How can you find out if radon's a problem in your home? If it is a problem, what can you do about it? Radon remediation and Bill will answer your questions about whatever projects you have going on or looming on the horizon right now. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Please join our conversation after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he is ready and willing to answer your questions about your home improvement projects. First, we're going to talk about radon gas. You can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, but radon gas can be found in homes all over the United States. Radon gas is the second most common cause of lung cancer after smoking, and the Environmental Protection Agency estimates that it causes 21,000 cancer deaths in the United States every year. So how can you find out if radon is a problem in your home? If it is there, what can you do about it? Well, Bill's going to help us answer those questions, and Bill has promised to do most of the talking today, so you don't have to listen to me croak quite as much.
No, I like the Kate Jackson. I said Kathleen Turner. You said Kate Jackson. So
well, we all have aspirations, don't we? So, Bill, where does radon come from?
Radon is basically just comes naturally from the soil, from decaying radioactive material that you know, we in Iowa think when we hear radioactivity, we hear anything that has to do with, like, say, uranium or anything. We automatically think of maybe Nevada, and I don't know why, but we do. But Iowa, it's just been generally accepted that Iowa probably has the highest averages in the country of this naturally occurring gas. And what it does is when this decays in the soil, the gas comes up out of the soil. And then it gets into our air, and as we're breathing. And the weird thing about it is you know, we talk about how to control it. We think that, okay, if we put concrete down, that'll stop. Well, radon gas can go through basically everything except, say, plastic or metal. You know, anything that has any porosity at all, it'll go through. So, basically a concrete floor, you know, hardly slows it up. And it's what's kind of frustrating is it's something you really can't pre-test for. Let's say if you want to go out and you want to build a new home, you just can't go out there and put a tester, like dig a hole or something and do a tester, because the radon is the levels are so spotty. You may do a let's say put in a sump pump in your basement, and you may test it in your basement at 300 picocuries per liter, and a picocurie per liter, that's what you'll see on these radon tests and stories. It's PCL, and really it's you don't really need to know what it is. It's just a rating system, and anything over 4 picocuries per liter is kind of in the United States, at least, that's kind of the action point. So you might have 300 picocuries per liter in a sump pit, and then you go 2 feet away and put a tester on top of a chair, and you may only be getting 2 or 3, and it just because it dissipates so fast and it's so spotty. But the thing about it is as this breaks down, the gas attaches to your into your lungs. And that's where you get the lung cancer, the issues, especially if you're a smoker, because it attaches to the particulates that you inhale. And you know, it just depends what articles you read. A lot of articles have said that if you're a heavy smoker and you're in a high radon area, that your odds are, you know, almost 100% that you're going to have lung cancer because of the two contributing factors of high radon and smoking.
So this is something that can happen in new construction. It can happen in an old farmhouse. It can be anywhere.
And the thing is, though, if you're building new, you know, you can build basically a radon controlling structure. You know, if you know the gas is there, And I don't know why anybody would build a new home, really, and not think about the radon because of Iowa's high averages. And it isn't that hard to control as long as, you know, you're basically controlling air and vapor in a new home. You're basically doing the same thing with the radon. So usually what a mitigation system is. Mitigation is just another term for, you know, let's control it and get rid of it. You know, and mitigation was always kind of a cool word to throw out. But what you're doing is you're taking control of the radon gas underneath usually your basement floor, your basement slab, and you're depressurizing underneath there by use of a pipe and a fan system. So what you're trying to do is you'll stick a pipe down through the floor or into your sump pit if you have one, and then you'll attach a fan to it. And then what this fan does is it causes a suction underneath the slab. So it's pulling the gas back down from, say, up above your basement floor, back down into the soil, and then through the pipe and then out the roof. And it has to go out the roof. It just can't. We would ask EPA people, why can't we just take it up, say, 8 feet and go out the sidewall? Well, then there's some tendencies that it may come back in, and they just kept saying, nope, you're doing it, get it all the way out. And so if you're going to have someone do that, you want to make sure that they are going to go out the roof. And there's a few people running around that saying they're radon mitigation specialist, and you have to be licensed in the state of Iowa. So what you need to do is get a hold of the Iowa Department of Public Health, and they have a list of radon mitigation specialists. They've been trained, you know, to conduct radon tests. They've been trained to install radon mitigation systems, and there's different certifications and credentials that go with that. But the Department of Public Health, they have a lot of information on the internet. The EPA has a tremendous amount of information on the internet on how to get rid of it. Now, some people have said, well, why can't we just use a home ventilation system? You'd think, okay, we're pulling the air out of the house and taking it out. But as you're taking air out of the house, you're actually kind of causing a suction on the basement slab and the foundation walls. And so you're pulling that air in. So as you exhaust it out, you're pulling it right back in as replacement. So those systems really, you know, they're not made to control radon.
So what do you need to do as far as detecting the radon? Do you have to have someone else come in and do that for you, or can you do that with a home kit?
Oh, you can do it with a home kit. There's so many kits out there. You know, you can, like, they have a few day, you know, like say a 5 to 7 day. The best ones though are the 30-day tests, and you can buy those basically any hardware store. You can also, you know, get those through the Department of Public Health. I would do some research too on which ones, like Consumer Reports, and which ones actually are the best at giving you, you know, perfect readings. In fact, back at Iowa Central, I was back there the other day, and I have on a shelf through a grant we received a long time ago. In the I think it was 1996, I bought a radon mitigation test unit, and it's still running. It's sitting on a shelf, and it's been taking readings since 1996. And so we can average out what we have right now. The longer the period, the better, because so many things also affect what your readings are going to be. Is if your house is under a positive pressure sometimes, or negative pressure, you know, like let's say this time of the year, if you're doing a 5-day test, if you're in there cooking and all of a sudden you're turning on all these fans and people are visiting, they're turning on bathroom fans, they're turning on range hoods, so causing all this suction in the house, you may be having a real high radon reading where your tester is. But if you're not running all those fans causing a negative pressure in your basement, you might not have a high reading. So, and you also have to look at weather conditions. So you want to do your research on it and do more than one, but you have to make the decision of what is going to be my action number. And if you get a reading of, say, 6 picocuries per liter in your basement, and all you do is go down there and change the furnace filter or something, it's probably not worth your time. But if you've got a bedroom down there, then it's something you really need to consider.
And as you go through the mitigation process, What kinds of questions do you need to ask of the people who are putting together the system for you?
Well, the first thing you want to ask is for references. And, you know, do you have any in this area? I'd like to contact somebody. And then do you test afterwards? You know, sure, you go ahead and say, this is your reading. Well, you know, did they test for you? And I hate to put a bad light on it because I guess maybe I'm just a little scared sometimes, especially in this economy. There's people out there trying to get your money. You want to do a test, maybe have another party do a test. And ask them, you know, how many tests have you done? You know, what are we getting for around here for readings? You know, kind of feel them out a little bit and ask them how many they've put in. I've got a friend that's probably put in hundreds of them. And so he's called and said, you know, what he's noticed is he gets back with the people. What I really like about that is he calls them back and say, okay, you know, let's run another test, and it's been a year, but let's just see what's going on and make sure everything's working right. You know, listen for the fan. You know, if nothing else, put your hand on the pipe, feel if there's a little vibration, make sure everything's working right, and reminds them for that upkeep, whereas I think some people put it in and you know, forget about it. You know, ask them if they have a maintenance type of a plan where they'll check back and remind you if nothing else, give you a, you know, quick email, hey, have you checked to make sure it's working? And one thing that some of these guys that have been putting them in for a long time is after a year or so, or after a couple of years, people have been saying, you know, my basement is drier now than it used to be. And because of that negative pressure underneath the slab, it's also controlling water vapor and moisture. And so it's kind of drying underneath the slab and drying around the foundation. So their basements actually are more usable. And I, you know, like I told him, why don't you market it that way? You'd probably be able to, you know, save more lives just saying we're making a drier basement.
We have a mitigation system in our basement, and our basement was not dry this summer. So,
well, it can only do so much. Right. Yeah.
If you market it that way, you may run into a little bit of trouble. Well, we'd love to hear your questions and comments about radon or any of the projects that you're working on in your home. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll start with a question from Tony over email. We may not have time to answer this whole question here. Actually, we won't have time to answer this whole question here. What am I doing? So we'll talk about that question in just a couple of minutes. But if you are concerned about radon problems in your basement, in your home, and you want to find out more about testing or mitigation procedures, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. And of course, Bill will answer your questions about anything at all. It doesn't even have to be home improvement related. Trust me, the man will talk. But home improvement questions would be most appreciated. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest is our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here today with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. And we've been talking about radon, radon gas, and radon remediation. And we'd love to take your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And first, we're going to go to Kay from Ames. Hello, Kay. Hello, Kay. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Kay. What's your question?
We do laundry and use a saw and so forth in the basement. And if it can come through, radon can come through concrete, then probably sealing up cracks in the basement floor wouldn't be any help.
No, not really. You know, it may slow us a little bit down, but it really doesn't help a whole lot. You know, because and some people have tried even you know, painting the floor surface, but then, you know, it'll come up around the edges of the floor. And then, you know, even when you think there's no way you could get every spot, especially if you have walls down there or if you have flooring. So it's just best to get a, you know, do a test. And if you have a high reading and you're uncomfortable with it, then go ahead and have a get a hold of a mitigation specialist and find out how much it is. Some are very expensive, some are not.
But if a pipe goes under the floor, that's only in one place. So how would that make everything safe?
Well, what it does is, that gas, when we create a little bit of a suction underneath the slab, the gas goes through the soil real slow. And it's, and I also have that same issue sometimes. I think, holy smokes, that concrete is, you fall on it. I mean, that's tough. You can't go through it. But the gas can go through, and it goes through the soil very, very slowly, but it goes at a nice rate. And it'll suck underneath that whole basement slab as normally. Now, there's a passive mitigation system as well. That may be one thing that people may want to ask for is, can we try a passive mitigation system first, which is just installing the pipe, through the basement slab and then just take the pipe all the way out the roof without a fan. Because a lot of times there may be enough difference in pressure that you'll get a natural suction out of that pipe, kind of how like warm air will rise up that pipe. Air moving across the pipe causes a suction at the top, and so it pulls, it might be enough that just a passive system without any power will work. That's why a lot of builders, you will see a lot of builders putting in a 3 or 4 inch, PVC pipe through the slab and all the way out the roof. And then people, what is that for? So they have to label it. They'll label it passive mitigation system, because there have been people say, hey, there's a drain pipe. Let's go ahead and hook a toilet into it, and they don't have any idea where it's going.
Okay.
So you want to label it. But, you can also try that as well. And that's, fairly inexpensive.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks
a lot, Kay. Thank you so much for your call. And let's go to an email. We have an email from Tony. He says, my wife and I recently purchased our first home built in 2005 and received the news that the radon level was 6.0 picocuries per liter.
Okay.
To avoid the stress of coordinating with the sellers and contractors, we decided to delay the mitigation until a more convenient time for us. How long is too long to wait to have the radon mitigated?
Well, it's like anything else. It will accumulate in your system. So, do it as soon as you possibly can, especially if you're going to use that area, if you're going to be there a lot, especially bedrooms. That's the one that really scares me, and especially when you have kids. And you put them, it's cheap square footage to put, kids in the basement. But remember, there still has to be an egress window, an escape window for a bedroom. But still, if they're going to be spending a lot of time down there, or if it's a playroom, if you the kids end up going and spending maybe half their time down in the basement watching TV or whatever, playing down there, you want to get that taken care of. You really do. So that's something I would move that, to the forefront.
He also says, we have an unfinished basement currently, and each contractor has wanted to put the mitigation system in the middle of the room, which mm-hmm. doesn't work well with our plans. Are there any other systems or other options which are more discreet, and can these be installed during the wintertime?
Yes, they can be installed. Really, the only problem you're going to have is somebody's going to be crawling around in your attic, and you'll be poking a hole out through your roof. So you want to catch, like, say, maybe this Thursday, it's going to be nice and warm in the 40s or 50s. But, they want to put one in the middle, but there's no reason you can't put some on the outside. Maybe have multiples of pipes and then tie them all together in the attic. It'll, of course, cost you more money, but you're going to have make that decision. Whether you're going to have a pipe in the center. It makes a lot of sense to have it in the center because it's the shortest runs, but you might have to maybe have multiple pipes. But then you still only have one hole out the roof.
We also have another email. This one comes from John. He says, I did a test for radon in my basement over a 10-month period. The measure came back with a reading over 10 picocuries. I did a second test on the first floor of my house over a 1-week period. That measure came back at only 1.5.
Sure.
We only use the basement for laundry and once in a while for exercise, or we do use exercise equipment down there. Should we mitigate, or given that the reading was low on the first floor and the floor that we spend most of our time on, can we ignore it?
That's where that's a personal decision because, there again, if you're using it for exercise, you're inhaling a lot more than normal. And that's what's neat about radon, I guess, is most first floors measure very little. Sometimes you may get less than one, here in Iowa. So it can be the first floor is real healthy, but it's that doggone basement, because it is that, inherently the basement is in the soil. And so you're getting it from the sides as well as the basement floor. Me personally, I'd move the you know, I hate to say it, but I'd move the exercise stuff up or put a mitigation system because 10's pretty high. You know, 10 is.
You know, I think a lot of people are worried about testing for radon before they sell their houses because they're afraid that this is going to be a big problem with a house sale.
Right.
If you have a radon mitigation system, that might be a red flag for some people. How does that play out in the housing market?
Well, you know, a lot of mortgage companies, a lot of banks require mortgage tests before they sell. Up in Fort Dodge, we've some companies that bring people in and they stay for 3-4 years and then they move on to their next position. So we have a lot of turnover in houses, and a lot of the houses that I was involved with was part of the key to selling that home is they had to have a test done, and if it was over 4, they had to have a mitigation system put in. To me, it would be a plus. You know, I would much rather see the preventative side. For one thing, it says, okay, if I knew anything about radon, you know, I'd say, okay, Iowa obviously has a problem. This person has been proactive and taking care of it for me. And I'm thinking, okay, they've just saved me $1,500 to $2,000 probably if they put in a very good system. And, yeah, I would look that as a plus. I really would. You know, I would really rather see that than say granite countertops or fancy this or fancy that. You know, that health side means a lot more to me than all this glitz that a lot of times we get hung up on in a house.
We're going to go to Norma from Pella next with an outside question for us. Hello, Norma.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm wondering about having roof work done, that is, I have to have a pipe through my roof, maybe, and I'm wondering about the shingles being brittle when it's so cold that the person's doing the work might break the shingles.
Yes, there's that possibility. Now, some contractors, when it is this cold, what they'll do is they'll just take up a heat gun with them. It looks similar to a hair dryer, but it puts out a lot warmer air, and they'll gradually, not real fast, they'll gradually heat that area around where they're working to heat that heat those materials up to get those shingles warmed up to, you know, say 90 to 100 degrees, and then they're easy to work with. You know, you're exactly right. And the other side of it is I don't know if my insurance agent would like to see somebody climbing around up on my roof when it's this icy and snow either. So
yes, that's right. And so, what about just walking on the shingles for brittleness?
It's, you know, that's what happens is you can break your shingles. So a lot of times they'll wait till it's warmer. And, you know what your reading is, and then get somebody scheduled right now. So the first warm days, you know, when there's nothing on the roof, you know, if it's in the, you know, the 30s and 40s, it's not going to really hurt your shingles. A good contractor.
How long does it have to be in the 30s and 40s?
Well, it also depends on what the color of your shingles. If you have, say, dark brown or black shingles, those doggone things are going to be pretty warm, even if it's, you know, 15, 20 degrees.
Okay.
Well, gray, you know, I'd wait till it was consistently in the 30s and 40s.
Can I ask you one other question?
Sure.
If I have a 70,000, if I have a 70,000 BTU furnace and change to a 90,000 BTU, do you know how many degrees warmer the 90,000 BTU furnace would be than the 70,000 BTU?
If they're designed correctly, it should keep your house the same temperature.
But I'm wondering how much the air would be warmer.
Well, that all depends again on the unit itself. That's all controlled. A 70,000 and a 90,000 should be putting out the same temperature out the plenum, if they're designed correctly. It's just basically how much, usually a lot larger fan or how much gas they're using.
But the 70,000 would have to run longer.
Well, there again, it depends on the design. You know, where we found out is probably the biggest problem we have right now is ductwork design. Is, you know, you can put in a 40,000 BTU furnace and it may perform better than a 100,000 BTU furnace if the ductwork is installed correctly and designed correctly. There's a real push in the state of Iowa nationally as well on training
What is the correct design work? Is the correct design for ductwork? This has been put in 1965.
Okay, well, there's called what's a manual J, which you would ask your heating and cooling person. That's what they design the heating and cooling system for your house with. They do a manual J. And then there's a manual D, which is the ductwork design. And so if you ask the person that's doing the work, did you do a manual J on my house? And it's if they glaze over and don't know what you're talking about, move to somebody else.
There were no manual J's or D's done before this was done, the ductwork was installed.
Yeah, and see, when you change a furnace, you know, then it kind of changes the ductwork design as well.
It had a really big furnace, 150,000 BTU,
sure,
old-style furnace, and then went to 70,000, and the air is not very warm.
Yeah, you may want to call them back and, you know, see if there's some design changes they might be able to make to the ductwork to make it perform a little bit better.
Would that be, do you mean tightening it up, sealing it
sealing it and maybe some routing and maybe some downsizing of ductwork.
Downsizing.
Yeah, just to see you can throttle the air a little bit faster through certain parts of the house. Yeah, get somebody that's really familiar with ductwork design to come in and take a look at it.
Norma, thank you so much for your call today. I hope that helps.
Good answers.
Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot. Next up, we've got Tony from Des Moines. Hello, Tony.
Yes, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I just had a question about, you know, being a construction professional, not a radon professional, a mitigation specialist. But, you know, obviously I'm not afraid to tackle a project. Is it something that a typical, you know, construction professional be able to tackle, or is it something I should really, stick with the pros? And a second question would be, you know, just how involved is getting certification to be a radon mitigation specialist?
Well, I wouldn't have a problem at all putting my own system in, you know, if you're fairly competent. But then it comes down to getting to liability issues if you plan to sell the house. Mm-hmm. It may mean something quite a bit more to, say, a banker or an appraiser or something as to actually who installed it. What you'd want to do is just go to the Iowa Department of Public Health. They have a really good website. And they can tell you exactly, what you have to do to become a certified professional. They have a complete list there. They have the codes that you have to follow, the Iowa codes, the administrative codes. There's application forms there to be a tester, in a lab or a specialist, and to be a mitigator. So they have all that. They have all that there on that website. And that's just, I just typed in Iowa Department of Public Health radon, and their site, pops right up. And they also have, what's really cool, is they have data by county on results, radon test results. So they've accumulated all that data. So I'm from Webster County. I can just pull up, okay, what's the average here in Webster County, say, in 2006 or 2007? There's a tremendous amount of information there.
Good to know.
Yeah, it is. The kids are going to end up with our house, so it's no big deal. I know how to put them in. But yet, if it's for a customer, I probably wouldn't. I would hire a mitigation specialist because they're insured for that. There may be some new things that have come out that I'm not aware of. To me, when I hand a customer that house in the back of this owner's manual that every new homeowner should get, is the phone number of the radon person. If you ever have any questions, there's the contact person to get a hold of, and here's the rules and regulations we went by. I mean, that means an awful lot to somebody when they know exactly what kind of system it is. It kind of goes back to what Charity said earlier of, what's it maybe going to affect the sale on the house? That documentation is pretty nice to have.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for your call. And Max from Windsor Heights has a similar concern, a curiosity about working on radon remediation,
sure,
as a homeowner. Hi, Max.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Charity. What's your question?
Well, the previous call kind of took my question, but I was wondering about the kits that you get in the department stores or home improvement stores where you mail that in. Is that effective in determining whether you have radon?
Yes, yes.
Those work fine.
Yeah.
The other thing, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what you want to do is, you know, I haven't used them for quite a while. I think the internet's really cool. I think I'd really, you know, pull up some testing results or consumer reports on different brands. You know, there may be some that they have a better record of of performance and accuracy.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I was going to ask you, are there situations where you might have radon, but Phil, you don't need to mitigate, say, a basement that's seldom used or a crawl space under a house?
You know, there are some, but, you know, if it's a really high level, you'd still want to test the main floor up above them. But, you know, if the main floor where you're at, if it's, you know, say below 4, I wouldn't really worry about if the basement is an 8 or 9 or 10 if I'm not down there very much.
So test the basement, then test the first floor too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would. Some people, you're overdoing it, but I'd rather be, you know, proactive, I guess.
If you get cancer, you certainly aren't going to feel like you overdid it.
Right.
Yeah, you're right there. Yep.
Yeah, it's too bad that people will get upset about so many issues that really aren't very significant, but something like this, which is a very serious health issue, it just doesn't, you know, people don't seem to pay much attention.
It can be easy to ignore. But Max, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. My guest today is our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. We've been talking about radon remediation, and we'll talk about any home improvement projects you want to talk about. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day. I'm talking with Bill McAnally today. And we would love to hear from you with your questions. We've been talking a lot about radon remediation projects throughout the hour. And if you have questions about that, feel free to join the conversation. But if you have questions about anything else, you can also give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim from Cedar Falls says, I want to insulate the walls of my home built in 1955 with foam insulation. What's your opinion or experience with foam insulation, Bill?
Both ways, good and bad. When you have a good installer, it's very good. When you have somebody that's maybe just getting into it, hey, you know, let's kind of tap into this energy efficiency market and start doing some homes, I'd be really nervous. We've seen drywall get completely blown off the interiors on some projects. Maybe they're putting in off a little bit of foam's good, a lot's better. There's some issues to think about. Luckily, your house is, you know, fairly new, but you want to be sure and get somebody that if they're going to blow foam in, that they use a foam that's not going to expand too much, okay, and say maybe warp your drywall, and make sure they fill the whole wall cavity. You know, even houses in the 50s, you probably have some insulation in there. There used to be that kind of age era house had some of them had like inch and a half. It was called inch and a half economy insulation. It was great. So you had an inch and a half thick fiberglass with a paper face on it in a 3.5-inch cavity, which never really made a whole lot of sense. But if they're going to blow foam in there, it has to be able to fill the hole cavity. And, you know, how can you tell? Well, you have to have somebody that's installing it that either is doing some other test holes to make sure that it's filled the cavity, or they're doing some thermal imaging, or they have some openings from the outside where they can see. It gets a little bit hairy sometimes. Now, if it's an older home, that's when it really gets nervous, because that old knob and tube wiring that are in the really older homes, the electrical code says you cannot have insulation in contact with those. So how are you going to blow a wall and not have the whatever kind of foam, you know, or cellulose or whatever, not touch that? So an older home, it's a little bit scarier. But if they're going to put this foam in, they have to make sure and fill the cavity. And because if there's any wood, other like fire blocking in there, you may only get a third of the wall filled.
All right. Well, that's a...
It all kind of comes down to the installer. It really does. If it's a very good, reputable installer, it's great product. Get some fly-by-night person, that's the worst nightmare.
All right.
How's that?
Good.
Is that
good
politically
luck,
correct?
I think.
Yes. It's the end of the year.
George is on the line now from Des Moines. Hello, George.
Yes, hello. I got a totally different question.
Okay.
A year or two or maybe longer ago, you spoke about a product that restores rotted footing posts and stuff like that, that you could restore the post rather than having to replace it.
Well, you George, he's become very excited now that you just said that.
Yeah.
So I know he knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I tell you what, my brain, since it is the end of the year, has so many facts that have fallen out of the ears. I'm trying to think of what the name of it is, but it's an epoxy. And I had a magazine with me today, and I was hoping their ad was in there. But what it is it's an epoxy that you scrape out the old stuff, and especially like the bottom of posts and that, and then it fills it back in and brings it back to, you know, a paintable surface.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it exactly, but you don't recall the name, huh?
Oh, man.
I knew it was an epoxy, but I need a name.
Yeah, it's, you know, and here I am leafing through.
Is it a wood filler or a?
It's a wood filler, but it's an epoxy. And I know that there's probably my friends that are probably listening right now are going, come on, you moron. You should know this one.
All right. Well, we will figure it out, George. We'll figure it out. And then we will get back to you by the end of the
show. Oh, man, I feel so insecure now that I didn't know that one.
All right. I'll keep listening.
Oh, boy.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
We'll try to figure it out before 11 o'clock. Okay, George?
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your
call. I'm sorry, George.
Well, I'm sure you'll come up with it, Bill.
Well, I just brought the wrong things, I think. Boy, now I'm... my mom's disappointed. She's...
Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, really.
All right. Well, we'll try to do better on this one. Paul is on the line in the Quad Cities. Hello, Paul.
Good morning. I had a question about a whole house humidifier that I installed a couple weeks ago.
Ooh, okay.
And it works great. It's adding some much-needed moisture to the air in our house. But what I noticed was when I put the humidistat and that little sail switch in the ductwork leading up to the furnace itself, how dusty the inside of the ductwork was.
Right.
And I was just curious, what in a few years' time, if you know the dust, if it accumulates on those two, you know, the humidistat and the sail switch, is that going to impact its performance?
Yes, I'm not a big fan of whole house humidifiers, especially if your house is fairly new. Especially if your house is fairly tight.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to houses that have installed a whole house humidifier, and all of a sudden, let's just say that excess humidity gets pushed places where it shouldn't be, like into wall cavities. And caused frozen insulation. Now, this is just the worst case scenario. I don't like them, me personally.
Okay.
But the thing is too, if you're throwing moisture into a dirty duct, you know, all of a sudden now you've got wet lint or wet dust, and now it's just mud. I think a lot of people that have installed them will have their ductwork clean first.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about that too, and I thought, boy, I should have had that done before.
Yeah.
And we've never, our house is from the late 60s.
Okay.
And we've lived in it for about 3 years now. And how expensive is getting ductwork clean? I'm sure it depends on how much ductwork you have.
Yeah.
Our house is about 1,500 square feet.
Sometimes it's not very expensive. I would do it anyway, since the house is of that age. It's a good thing to do, and then you can, you know, if there's any issues, they'll find them as well. But for that humidifier to work good, that ductwork has to be clean, because the last thing you want to do is throw moisture into a dirty duct, and then all of a sudden you start getting some mold growth.
Yeah, well, we put the humidifier in. We have a newborn baby, and she just has a lot of dry skin all over her, and
okay.
Just a little bedroom humidifier wasn't cutting it.
Okay.
And I looked into these things, and it sounded like a good idea. And like I said, it's working well. Maybe I need to dial the humidistat down some so it doesn't add too much moisture.
Yeah, you know,
in the house.
You're right, because especially when it's this temperature, You know, you like say 10 degrees. If it's 10 degrees out, the condensation in your house or the moisture level in your house should be about 35%.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, and when it gets colder, like zero, you know, it's 30%. So you may have a lot of moisture. Now, if it's controlled correctly, they're a good thing. But that's when they're just put in without somebody looking at the design, that's when they scare me. I mean, they're a good product if you can control that air and make sure that it's not going to get into the wall cavities or into your insulation.
Okay. Well, we'll look into having the ductwork cleaned. That's probably a good idea no matter what.
Yeah, it would. You know, with that age of house, you know, I think that's something that a lot of people should have done, because I really don't know too many people that clean, you know, change their filters when they're supposed to.
How do they actually clean out all the ductwork throughout the house?
Oh, they've got equipment that just goes right into the ductwork, and they can go all the way through the, you know, they vacuum them out, and they've got, you know, small cameras. They can, you know, go in there and see what's going on and see how clean they are. So, you know, they have the equipment that's specifically made for that, for cleaning the ductwork, right?
All right. Okay, well, thanks for the help.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Paul. And next up, we're going to go to Al in Fairfield. Hello, Al.
I was wondering, you were looking for the epoxy wood filler. Is there something called PC products? I don't know if that was it. That was just a thought I had that might help. Another guy was looking for the epoxy wood filler. I have a question about radon on different terrain. Like, I live on the top of a hill, and I was wondering if that makes a difference as far as the amount of radon. I do have a radon, I guess it's a 4-inch or 3-inch pipe in the basement that goes out the roof, but I haven't checked to see if any airflow is coming out of there, and I haven't checked for radon. Should I still check for radon?
Yeah, I'd still check, but it's kind of funny that okay. It's kind of funny that you bring that up. My brain doesn't work really good sometimes. If I look at something in a book and then I'm talking, it just gets off track. It's kind of like, I always kind of liken it to water. You know, you think, okay, if I'm going to drill a well, if I go down the lowest area, I'll probably get to the, you know, water first.
Right.
You know, but you drill the top of the hill, sometimes it's right there. So the terrain really isn't going to affect anything. It just depends on the type of soil that's there. And that PC products, I think that's the one I'm thinking about. It's a picture of a post in the magazines, and then there's another one you can read about it at Rot Doctor. Look it up, because Charity's helping me out there.
Trying
to help me out.
Well, they had a bunch of brand names: Liquid Wood, Get Rot.
That one there's
Liquid
too.
Liquid Wood.
Yep, that one too.
Okay,
but I know that PC products when you're talking about. Thank you, boy, that helps.
All right. Well, George, I hope that helps George too.
Okay. So one more. I have a couple more questions. They're sort of unrelated, but
sure.
I apologize. Does heating with wood, and if you have to buy your wood, like it's, you know, $65 a truckload, is that actually going to be less expensive than just keep the, you know, the propane furnace on?
If the furnace is efficient, it's going to be a lot better for the air quality usually as well if you just stick with the propane. You know, the other thing too with the wood is some of the insurance companies aren't too happy about that. In fact, up front page of our Ford Dodge Master this morning, somebody's house burned down because of a fire in their fireplace.
Oh, well, this is not a fireplace. But anyway, it's a, you know, enclosed wood burning, you know.
Okay.
So it's a toss-up.
Yeah, I used to do it all the time.
I noticed last year it cost me like $500 for a 2,700-square-foot house, even though I didn't really heat the basement too much. The basement was probably about 60 degrees, and upstairs was 73 or something. And that was the total bill for both wood and propane.
Okay.
Anyway, what should the humidity level be? I noticed that the window manufacturers say the lower the better, the colder it is. Of course, the colder it is, the more you want humidity for the sake of being able to breathe.
Yeah.
Charity.
Yeah.
I've got a humidifier, trust me.
It depends on, I like keeping it, you know, like 40 to 45, but yet the houses that we always did always had a, you know, energy recovery ventilator, heat recovery ventilator in the house, and you know, we were really paid attention to to vapor controlled building the homes. But you know, that's the thing is the reason the window manufacturers want it to be drier is because then you don't see the condensation on the bottom of the windows.
Well, we had ice build up on the inside in certain windows last year. And this year I've been a little bit more aggressive about not letting that happen, but then the humidity is right around 30.
You know, and now it's 30 in the middle of the room. Go put that right next to the window where the ice is, and it'll probably read like 50 to 60 to 70% because it's colder right next to the glass.
Oh, right.
Because since, you know, the cold air can't hold as much. So, you know, that's what's always kind of funny is I've always asked people, well, where are you getting your reading from, the center of the room or right next to the window? Because, you know, you'll get two different readings. But, you know, the American Lung Association always used to have a chart, and it was for health and everything, you want to be, say 40-45%.
Oh, okay.
You know, drier than that, your sinuses crack. Wetter than that, their sinuses are wet, and you pick up everything. So you try to stay in that range. But, yeah, you know, sometimes you may want to think about, okay, I better get a window then that's going to take a little bit of moisture on the bottom of it.
All right. Al, thank you so much for your call today.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Al.
Thanks a lot. Larry from Coralville says that he does have the epoxy's name for sure. Larry?
Thank you, Larry.
I think you're talking about Avatron.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot of different brands now.
Well, the charity mentioned something called Liquid Wood, which is the name of an Avatron product.
Okay.
And then there's they've got a marine grade solid wood filler they use in conjunction with the liquid stuff.
Reinforce
it, the liquid, and then fill it with the A and the mixture of the A and the B, and the stuff is it's millable and paintable, sandable, whatever you need.
That's very strong.
All right, terrific. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye.
So you floundered around on that one. Thanks a lot, Larry. Here's a question from Matt in LeClaire. He says, they recently procured a river cabin. It's a great location, but originally built in 1907. The home inspector noted that the wiring has two wire with a stab electrical box, said it passed code, but he suggested replacing it. Electrical seems to work well, but the lack of three-prong outlets requires an adapter to use newer fixtures.
Yep.
What kind of risk are we talking about?
Well, since he lives, got a nice river cabin, to help him out and let me come over there and fish sometime.
Right. You'll take a look at it
I'll take a look at it personally. You know, I would pull the if you're going to use it and fix it up, put any investment in it at all, I would get the wiring upgraded, get it all grounded. And especially the knob and tube, that stuff wasn't really made for our appliances. We have so many more appliances than when we were putting knob and tube in. You know, you can overload it just with a couple of the things you have in the kitchen. So I would upgrade it. And that way also, then when you insulate the wall cavities, then you can completely fill the cavities. You don't have to worry about the knob and tube getting too warm.
Okay.
You know, it served its purpose. But if you're going to fix it up at all, I would redo it.
All right. And I think we have time for one more quick question. Kevin says, my son owns a home that has limestone walls. They've had a water leak through, but he's installed a sump pump. It's been dry for over a year now, wants to repaint the walls. How should he prep them?
A stone wall?
Yes, limestone.
Okay, limestone.
They currently have some paint and other materials flaking off.
Yes, that's the one thing about the stone is it's so porous. About any product you're going to put on that, especially on the joints, will probably flake off over time. In a lot of cases, it's just better off to let that breathe. But you can get a hold of a stone manufacturer and ask them. Maybe do some research on that. That's really tough. There's really no right or wrong answer on stone, because it depends on the porosity and it depends on how much vapor's coming in, depends on how much your yard slopes. You may end up having more problems by painting it, because then the moisture gets stuck and then all of a sudden it'll just fall off in big chunks.
Okay, we are out of time, Bill, but can you give us the answer line in case people have some questions that are still nagging?
Yes, Iowa State University Extension Helpline, 1-800-262-3804. So you can go ahead and get a hold of them, and they'll get a hold of me, and we can answer any questions we might have missed today.
All right, say it one more time.
1-800-262-3804.
All right,
thank you.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much today.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support and aims from Michael Yeager and Eric Jordan. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about the English language and the wine industry with Dennis Reese. You won't be listening to me. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.